Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. Civil Defense Radio brings you news, commentary, and the views of subject matter experts on what is happening in the emergency preparedness, community resiliency, and critical infrastructure protection movements. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil Defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and we hope to help you with information and knowledge so you may be better able to help your family, neighborhood, and community when needed. You can find out more on our website at civildefenseradio.com, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. So let's get on with our show. Today we have Michael Mabee on with a special report that he's just finished, and it's a dynamic one. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, Preston, it's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
It's great having you here. I've had a lot of comments from relatives about your last show, and so you were a hit. So it's good to have you back, and we'll probably have you back more often too.
That's great. My mother would be proud.
All right. So for those who didn't have a chance to catch your last show that you were on, can you give us a quick intro of who you are and what you've been doing over the last couple of years?
Sure. I'm part of the Secure the Grid Coalition, which is a national coalition, which Preston is one of our esteemed members as well, a national coalition of experts on critical infrastructure protection, civil defense, policy, and, you know, particularly we have a focus on the threats to the electric grid and how to protect against threats to the electric grid, and also how to prepare our communities for long-term power outages. So I've been, you know, with the coalition for about a year. Prior to that, I'm the author of the Civil Defense book, which is a book on emergency preparedness for communities. And I've been involved in training people, you know, to be resilient as communities, and as well as working to protect the critical infrastructures of the U.S. So that's a little bit about who I am and what I've been up to lately.
Well, you're also an active blogger. On your site, you have a host of interesting articles, and the latest one is what we're going to be talking about. And this one is, when I saw it come up on my email, I said, whoa, just with the title, man, you, you're gonna cause some waves with this one. So let me just give the audience an intro into your article here. It starts off, the title is Edison Electric Institute Helping China Lobby for Less Grid Security? Mike, can you tell us what brought you to this report, the beginnings of it, and some of the things that you found, and where did the money go?
Sure. So let's start out really quick with, you know, who is Edison Electric Institute, and also who is EPRI, you know, the Electric Power Research Institute. And so I've been involved with the Secure the Grid Coalition in trying to hold the federal government accountable and hold the electric utilities accountable for critical infrastructure protection. And along the way, I've run several times into the Edison Electric Institute. And who they are, their website describes them as the trade association that represents all U.S. investor-owned utility companies. So basically what they are is they're a lobbyist. You know, they're a group that represents the investor-owned electric utility companies. And so they have members, and the you know, they have a member list up on their website. And so, you know, as you would expect, you know, you see all of these names that you recognize, you know, Duke Energy, PG&E, you know, Entergy, Exelon, you know, all of these big name investor-owned utilities, you know, as members. But one thing that caught my attention recently, the Edison Electric Institute has been opposing our efforts to get NERC, the regulator, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, to release the names of critical infrastructure protection violators. So, you know, this goes back about a year. We discovered that since 2010, NERC, as well as the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, have not been releasing names of companies that are subjected to regulatory actions for violating critical infrastructure protection standards. So we began fighting that battle, and then along came the Edison Electric Institute, basically fighting against the transparency, you know, of who these violators are. And then in particular, the Edison Electric Institute also opposed my Freedom of Information Act requests, where I'm requesting that the federal government, FERC, release the names of the regulatory violators. And this is why this issue is important, and why Edison Electric Institute came to my attention, and, you know, why the current report came out. So in our regulatory system with the electric grid, if a company violates critical infrastructure protection standards, their name is not disclosed to the public. And in a regulatory view, and I've, you know, got a lot of experience with the government, part of holding a company accountable is that the public sees the regulatory actions and who they're against, and also state regulators and Congress can see the regulatory actions and who they're against. But in the electric utility industry, these regulatory actions are withheld, the names of the violators are withheld from the public. And so there is no incentive for companies to, for example, increase their cybersecurity protections if they know that, well, if I get caught violating the standard, if I, you know, don't do everything that I should do, it's not a big deal, because number one, my name isn't going to be divulged to the public. Nobody's going to know it was us. And number two, I can negotiate the fine, you know, with the regulators and settle the case. And
but so that's not a good thing, because it's not. Violates the confidence with the investor and with the public as well.
Well, absolutely. And so, you know, there's a couple things that are wrong with this scheme. Number one is, if you're an investor in these utilities, it seems to me you would want to know if the company that you've invested in is being subjected to regulatory fines for not doing the right thing on critical infrastructure protection, which is a major liability. I mean, if the grid was taken down by a cyber attack or a physical attack, and companies didn't do what they were supposed to do, just imagine the liability if deaths result from that. So as an investor, you would certainly want this information. Congress certainly wants this information, and the public is entitled to this information to see whether the regulatory scheme is working. And there is a lot of evidence that the regulatory scheme is not working. And I can cite a couple of quick examples, and then we can start talking about, you know, what I found with Edison Electric Institute. But, you know, for example, for those who follow critical infrastructure protection, you've heard of this. And for those who don't, I encourage you to go up to my website and kind of read up on this. But for example,
what is your website, Mike?
My website is civildefensebook.com. civildefensebook.com, and then you can just go and read all my blog articles, you know, on these critical infrastructure protection issues. But, you know, so just to give you a couple of quick examples, you know, we had a physical attack against a transformer in Metcalf, California in 2013, a very, very sophisticated sniper attack planned, carried out by multiple assailants. It wasn't, you know, vandalism. I mean, it was clearly a very well-planned attack people who knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Since then, you would think that there would have been a real emphasis on physical security. However, since the 2013 Metcalf attack, there have been exactly four citations for the physical security standard in the United States. So clearly there's something wrong there.
That's not because there wasn't any violation. That's because they're not necessarily enforcing it, right?
Well, that is such a great question, Preston. And the reason we don't know that is because the information is being withheld from the public. You know,
and the investor.
and the investor. So I would like to think that that means that all of our critical infrastructure is now protected, but I know that's not the case. You know, so for some reason, this standard just is not being enforced. And by the way, the standard is not, in my opinion, and you can read about this up on my website, is not a terribly good physical security standard to begin with, but you know, it's all we got. Another example is, you know, the fact that according to government sources, you know, we have had our grid penetrated and probed by state actors for over a decade. And by state actors, we're talking about Russia and we're talking about China for over a decade. Yet, you know, in the last year, the Secure the Grid Coalition has been fighting to get more stringent cybersecurity standards, you know, for the electric grid, and lined up fighting against us in this is the Edison Electric Institute. And it just seems counterintuitive, but, you know, we're fighting, for example, trying to get malware detection and removal and mitigation as part of the cybersecurity standards. And the Edison Electric Institute fought against that and actually won that round. So, you know, presently, even though we know that the Ukraine grid was taken down by malware, you know, implanted by the Russians in 2015 and 2016, malware is okay on the U.S. electric grid. There's no standard that says you have to remove it or mitigate it at this
point.
Is
that right? That's crazy.
Yeah, so,
that's crazy.
You know, and you know, so here's the Edison Electric Institute that's fighting against some of the protections that they Secure the Grid Coalition is advocating for. So, and also fighting against more transparency about who the violators of critical infrastructure protection standards are. So, you know, if there's incentive, if companies know that, well, if we get caught, and I'll give you a great example, is on Wall Street, the SEC and the Department of Justice all the time file press releases about companies and individuals that are either indicted or sued in civil court for violation of securities laws. In the food industry, you know, if there's a recall of food, the company is named,
yeah,
you know, in the
yeah.
recall. You know, in the auto industry, you know, if there's a recall, you know, the name and manufacturer and make and model of the vehicle is named so that, you know, people can, you know, make sure that they get that taken care of. And, you know, these companies are held accountable in all these other industries and these other regulatory schemes. But, you know, in the electric utility industry, companies are not held accountable for violations of critical infrastructure protection standards. And a large part of that is because the public does not know who the violators are, who the repeat violators are, who the, you know, recalcitrant, you know, companies are that just won't, you know, get their act together. You know, we don't have that information, and that information is being withheld, you know, by both the industry and the federal government.
And that's a problem because, you know, the public, they expect when they flip the switch, the lights to come on, but they don't think about the hazards that the grid has against it by foreign actors and nefarious individuals, and there's such a huge threat. They don't realize that the electric grid is the number one infrastructure item that everything else depends on. And
right.
So if these guys are allowed to continue operating as their own little mafia, then, you know, they're putting every one of us at risk. I mean, seriously at risk, because if the grid goes down, you know, there's hell to pay because there's no more America, because if it's down for any significant length of time, 12 to 18 months, we lose 90% of the population as per the EMP Commission report. So there's a huge liability here, and it's very hazardous for our way of life.
Correct. And so this is what, you know, really concerned me when, you know, we've been, you know, fighting this FOIA battle, and, you know, recently the Edison Electric Institute lined up against our FOIA request and also against our request in some particular FERC dockets, you know, to disclose the identities of the violators. So the Edison, you know, Electric Institute, as I said, is the trade association that represents U.S. investor-owned electric companies. They're also a lobbyist. In 2018, the Edison Electric Institute made $455,000 in political donations, you know, to members of both the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. But also, they contributed $795,000 into the political process and contributions, you know, including also to political parties and various PACs. And then they also, in addition to that, Edison Electric Institute in 2018 had total lobbying expenses of $8,109. All right, $8,109,000. $8,109,000. So now, and part of this, and I've seen this, is when you have people from Edison Electric Institute directly testifying to Congress, and, you know, directly testifying that, you know, we shouldn't rush to protect the electric grid from threats such as EMP. We should wait and we should study it more, which was directly opposed to, in this particular case that I'm thinking of, was a hearing with Senator Ron Johnson. And, you know, he was saying that, you know, we need to jump on this and we need to protect the electric grid now. And then you've got Edison Electric Institute saying, you know, no, we, you know, we should wait and we should study the problem more. And then, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Edison Electric Institute objecting to cybersecurity protections that, you know, the Secure the Grid Coalition has started to advocate. So in looking into the members, you know, as you'd expect, here's all these U.S. Investor-owned utilities. But I also noticed that the Edison Electric Institute has a lot of foreign members as well. And a couple of things jumped out at me when I looked at that. And there were three Chinese companies, the Southern China Southern Power Grid Company, the State Grid Corporation of China, and Power Assets Holdings. So let's talk a little bit about these three companies and then China in general, and why I kind of found this problematic.
Okay, let's take a quick break and come back on that in just a moment. Hey friends, please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high quality products. What she found was a company that we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure, therapeutic-grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them will be recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, En Garde blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. just visit our website at www.oilsforlifetoday.com. That's oils, number four, lifetoday.com. And explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic-grade essential oils for yourself. All right, we're back on Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. And our special guest today is Michael Mabey, talking about Edison Electric helping China lobby for a less secure grid. Go ahead, Mike, finish up where you last left off with China.
Sure. So, you know, in addition to the U.S. investor-owned companies, also members of the Edison Electric Institute are many foreign companies. And three of them are Chinese companies. So we've got the China Southern Power Grid Company, the State Grid Corporation of China, and Power Assets Holdings. So two of these, the first two, China Southern Power Grid Company and State Grid Corporation of China, are actually owned by the government of the People's Republic of China. Hmm. They are government-owned corporations. Power Asset Holdings is actually a Hong Kong company. But you have to remember, China calls Hong Kong the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region of the People's Republic of China. So even though the government doesn't outright own that company, there are some provisions of Chinese law that all three of these companies fall under. So all of these Chinese companies have an obligation under Chinese the 2017 Chinese National Intelligence Law to support, assist, and cooperate with state intelligence work. So that all of these companies have an obligation to cooperate with, you know, the People's Republic of China's intelligence apparatus. And moreover, they cannot refuse the Chinese government when asked for information. So why is this problematic? Well, to me, it's very problematic that the government of China is one of the very state actors that for the last decade at least has penetrated the U.S. electric grid. And now they're also a member of the lobbyist who's directly lobbying Congress against increased grid security measures. And I find that very problematic. And, you know, I would hope the American people and Congress would as well.
You know, that's unfathomable that this would be allowed. You know, as military veteran like yourself, you know, we put ourselves at risk when we put on the uniform, and then our power company allows a potential foe and somebody who's already identified as being messing around in our power grid to be on their organization that lobbies the federal government against securing our grid. It's crazy. I'm trying to wrap my head around this thing, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I am too. But you know, those are the facts. You know, the fact is these three Chinese companies that have an obligation to the People's Republic of China, you know, to cooperate in their intelligence efforts, are members of a lobbying group that is directly lobbying Congress on critical infrastructure protection matters. To me, that raises a whole bunch of red flags. And, you know, that was the reason that I wrote that article once I found that out. Now, you know, there's nothing, you know, against the law about lobbying. There's nothing against the law about lobbying the government for a particular position on an issue, even if it's a position that, you know, you and I don't agree with. You know, that's all, you know, perfectly legal under the law. And, you know, there's also nothing inherently illegal about foreign countries being involved in lobbying, you know, as long as they register and follow the rules. So,
right,
that, you know, all of that stuff is allowed. So I am not saying that there's anything illegal going on here. I don't know that, you know, I'm not the one that would make a determination on that. But, you know, what I am saying is there is some serious red flags when the People's Republic of China is a member of an organization lobbying against grid security or even lobbying about anything to do with critical infrastructure protection in an infrastructure that they've been accused by the U.S. government of penetrating.
Exactly.
That, you know, there's no possible way that I can make sense of this, but it is happening. These are the facts.
When I read this morning, it just blew me away. I couldn't believe what you had found here. I mean, it's here in black and white, and you're a professional. You're not gonna just write up a bunch of hyperbole. This stuff, you've got it well documented, and you got links to a lot of things that support your statements, and you've got a lot of information in this report. And
one of the things that I did put in there is, you talked about this a little bit at the beginning. So, as we said, the Edison Electric Institute made, a great deal of political contributions in 2018. So, at the bottom of my report, I've got the list, and the list comes from the Center for Responsive Politics, which is a fantastic website. Let me give a plug for them, and I don't even know them.
Yeah.
But, what they do is they provide this information to the American people about lobbying and political contributions. And it's very, very important information for the American people to understand. And in this particular case, this is how we can connect the dots that this lobbying group, Edison Electric Institute, that has members including the government of the People's Republic of China, and or companies that have an obligation to report to the government of the People's Republic of China, have made political donations to a number of both Democrat and Republican senators and House members over the years. And I think this is very important for the public to know. And I think it's very important for Congress to know, because honestly, I'm not sure whether every congressman and senator on this list realizes that they're taking money from an organization, that one of their members is the government of the People's Republic of China. But I think it's important that they know that. And so for those listening, if you're totally aghast by this, which I have been ever since I, discovered it and started writing about it, and everybody else who hears this, they can't believe it. What I would highly recommend you do is print up a copy of this report that I did up on my website and send it to your representative and send it to your senator. If they were on the list of people who took money, tell them to give the money back.
Exactly.
And if they weren't on the list, tell them, hey, you need to do something about this. We shouldn't have the government of the People's Republic of China should have nothing to do with any lobbying on our critical infrastructures. And if there isn't a law against it now, then Congress really needs to look at that.
Yes, you're right. And how much influence do these three companies have internally in EEI?
We do not know that.
There's no way of knowing.
It's a great question, but we don't have, and I very, very much hope that EEI would disclose some information on that, would certainly be the right thing to do. I don't know how much money, the members of EEI contribute dues. That's
yes,
one of the places where EEI gets its money. I don't have no idea, what these particular Chinese companies, contribute. And I don't know what say they have in the issues. I have no idea. That's all internal EEI stuff. But, knowing that EEI is involved in lobbying in particular positions involving critical infrastructure protection, and the U.S. electric grid, having the government of the People's Republic of China, which is one of the, the threats that we're trying to defend against, be members of that lobbying group, there's just something inherently wrong with that.
Yes, you're right. Now, we also don't know what kind of information or technology they are getting access to by being part of this organization. Now, I'm sure that there's a lot of equipment that we have that we've sold to everybody else around the world, because that's what we do. We invent things and then sell it around the world and make it a standard, which is what the SCADA systems were. They're American design, and now they're all over the world, and everybody's been able to take them apart and reverse engineer them, and that's how they get into our grid. But what kind of information are they getting access to now through their participation in this?
And that's a great question. And being as how the government of the People's Republic of China is not only an economic competitor, but it's a military adversary of us. And yes. We're reading about a lot of tension in the South China Sea, for example. And so the People's Republic of China is of military concern to us in the United States. So any way that we're giving them any advantage over our critical infrastructures or any information about our critical infrastructures, we're giving our adversary information that they just don't need. And as a military point, we shouldn't be allowing that to happen. So it's very, very possible that we have a gap in our laws that's allowing this to happen, or maybe there are laws that aren't being enforced. I'm not sure really what the answer is, but the fact of the matter is, I am very uncomfortable as an American citizen having the People's Republic of China have anything to do with our critical infrastructures or getting any information on our critical infrastructures.
I agree. I am too. This makes me very uncomfortable as well. This, from a counterintelligence standpoint, it's a coup for them for being in there and knowing who's doing what and who's not doing what. And it gives them real time intelligence on who they can take down anytime they want.
Yeah, and we are chumps if we allow this to happen.
Continue to happen.
Don't know any other way to put it, but the thing is, we all know we need to protect the critical infrastructures. I don't think there's anybody out there that would argue that we don't need to protect the critical infrastructures. And to have something like this going on is just extremely counterintuitive and literally stupid.
Yeah.
So, if you find this distressing at all, what you can do, and it won't take you much time, print up this article and send it to your representative and say, please look into this. We need to protect our critical infrastructures. If enough people did that, then, this issue will get on the radar screen. If you don't, if you're just kind of appalled by it, but, then you go on with your life, people, we need to participate in the process. I just really, really implore you all to take action and, just put a stamp on an envelope and send this to your Congress, representative or senator, and just ask them, what the heck, we need to protect our critical infrastructures.
Well, people also need to understand that all of our adversaries, the Russians, Chinese, Iranians, North Koreans, and Al-Qaeda and even ISIS, even though they're mostly decimated, but they all have knowledge of our infrastructure, and they know that the first, and matter of fact, the military strategy of Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea is to hit us with an EMP or knock out our critical infrastructure first before they do anything else, because they know that that is an equalizer and that shuts off our command and control to some degree. And so, a lot of times they won't even need to hit us with anything more, just take down our grid. And people think that it takes an ICBM coming from China or North Korea or someplace to do it. No, they've got ship-based stuff that they can throw up just in the Gulf of Mexico and take out our grid just by sending it up a couple hundred miles. A Scud goes 900 miles, and all they have to do is go 300. So it's not rocket science.
Right, and it's terrorist organizations, are the big question mark. Is it possible that a terrorist organization has gotten their hands on a nuclear weapon? And if not, is it possible that they could get their hands on a nuclear weapon? And I can't answer that question. I think it has got to be possible. So, after the Soviet Union kind of collapsed, they had a lot of nuclear weapons and a lot of different things that, became former Soviet countries. I don't have any information on the accountability of every past Soviet nuke or every nuke of all of these other nuclear countries out there.
Right.
For example, Pakistan and India, you got to remember their nuclear powers. South Africa, at one time was a nuclear power. Don't know if they still are. It's widely speculated, that Israel is a nuclear power. And then you've got North Korea. Now, North Korea, one of their strategic allies is Iran, and Iran is one of the biggest sponsors of global terrorism there is. So, is it possible that the North Koreans, through Iran, somehow get a nuclear weapon to a terrorist organization who can do exactly what you're describing? So we were shocked and surprised by 9/11. I don't want us to be shocked and surprised that a terrorist organization gets a hold of a nuclear weapon and is able to do a, relatively unsophisticated EMP attack on the United States.
Right.
But, we get a lot of, a lot of pushback sometimes. Well, nobody would do an EMP because they're afraid we would retaliate. If somebody did an EMP attack on us, they wouldn't do it because, we've got submarines out there and, we would wipe them off the map. We would retaliate. Well, perhaps that mindset applies to some countries that have a similar method of thinking that we do. So maybe that mindset might work, for the Russians, or maybe it might work for the Chinese. I don't pretend to even begin to understand Kim Jong-un's mindset. I don't pretend to even begin to understand Iran's mindset, and most certainly I don't understand the terrorist mindset.
Right.
But, there are adversaries we have out there who are unconcerned with our retaliation. That wouldn't be a factor in their calculus.
Right.
So I think that if we're relying on just the deterrent of our retaliation alone, that's not going to necessarily work for everybody.
Yeah. That's like a little guy taking on a big guy. He's going to do it if he wants to, and he's going to make sure he takes the big guy out quickly. And
9/11 is a great example.
Exactly.
I mean, do you think for a minute that Al-Qaeda didn't think that we would retaliate and do something? I mean, their whole point was they wanted us to, and we did, we can argue all we want, how effective our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were. But, the bottom line is, they were prepared for us to retaliate. They expected us to retaliate, and we did. So if a terrorist organization gets a hold of a nuclear weapon, what would stop them from attempting to take out our electric grid? The conventional deterrent things. Our submarines aren't going to stop a terrorist organization, from doing an attack. And moreover, that's not the only way terrorists can get us. We've also got cyber. We've got physical security, physical attack,
right.
Not to mention, the sun, not even terrorists. But, throughout all of this, what we have found is that, groups such as Edison Electric Institute, the lobbyist for the investor-owned utilities, has been fighting efforts to increase the critical infrastructure protection standards against some of these threats. And then, EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute, has also been a stumbling block.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, by, putting out patently misleading information,
lowballing everything.
Right. So, both of these, when you look at them on the surface, when you look at Edison Electric Institute and you look at the Electric Power Research Institute, EPRI, they appear on the surface to be these credible, institutions that, would, have credible information to, put into the conversation, and to the extent that they ever do that, bless them. We need input on these things.
Right.
But what we've found is when it comes at least to increasing critical infrastructure protection standards, they have actually been EEI and EPRI have been stumbling blocks to getting that done.
it's shameful.
They've been against it.
It's shameful on their part. They should be working day and night to make sure that their investment in the electrical grid is secure, rather than fighting us tooth and nail to keep it the way it is. It's like, I'm going to use somebody else's saying, it's like the tobacco industry saying that smoking is safe and there's no problem. Cancer, that comes from somewhere else. It's not from our smoke. Well, the smoke is in EPRI and EEI, as far as I'm concerned, and they're the ones who are telling us lies that everything is safe and hunky-dory and go ahead and keep on smoking. Well, it doesn't work that way. It's, I'm not from Missouri, but show me, prove it to me. And they haven't done so yet.
Right. And, you know, the American people, you know, largely are unaware. You know, I mean, I think that there's an assumption in America that the government's not going to let something bad happen. Well, you know, not everybody thinks that. But I think, you know, generally speaking, you know, people listening to you and I talking about that, you know, would be saying, but wait a minute, you know, why would the government let that happen? So let's talk a minute about kind of the regulatory scheme behind the electric grid, because that might kind of shed some light for some people. So, you know, what is the electric grid? The electric grid is actually about 2,000 separate entities, companies, public sector and private sector companies involved in the generation, distribution, and transmission of electric power. And they're private and public entities, and they're self-regulated. So the government cannot tell the grid to harden itself against particular threats, or cannot, you know, tell the grid what to do. The grid is self-regulated. And this self-regulatory scheme is what the Secure the Grid Coalition, you know, we've been saying, this is not working. Congress needs to take a look at it. The American people need to take a look at it. If the Russians and the Chinese have been in our grid for a decade and we haven't kicked them out yet, there is something wrong. And moreover, if they're members of the lobby that is lobbying against critical infrastructure protection standards, shame on us.
Well, if anybody doesn't know about the grid and the vulnerability, just go read Ted Koppel's book, Lights Out, and you'll get the whole story of what's going on, or what's been going on up until he wrote the book and published it in 2015. He documents it pretty well. And, you know, what Mike is saying is true, that they are in our grid. They're just waiting for a time to pull the plug.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we do need Americans. We need regular people to get involved, and get involved by getting your elected representatives knowing that you're concerned about this. There's a lot of money that the electric utility industry and the lobbyists and, you know, these companies make in political donations and lobbying. And, you know, what is going to resonate more than anything else is going to be if a lot of their constituents, a lot of a representative or senator's constituents, express concern on this issue and say, hey, we have got to protect the electric grid. You know, what is going on? So, you know, again, I implore everybody listening, you know, take some action, print up this article that I just posted this morning, and send it to your senator, send it to your representative, and say, what are you going to do to protect us?
Give us your website and any other social media you have, and that way they can find this report and others, the other great reports that you've done, especially the ones on civil defense, even though I'm a little biased towards that, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And I blog on civil defense and critical infrastructure protection, so there's something there for everybody, and for some of us both. But civildefensebook.com is the website, civildefensebook.com. And then on social media, I'm Civil Defense Book, Civil Defense BK on Twitter. You'll find me if you just Google Civil Defense Book. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, all of the usuals. But my website, civildefensebook.com. Please, people, get smart on the threats to the electric grid and engage your representatives and your senators.
And I also recommend going to Amazon, looking for Mike's book, The Civil Defense Book. It gives you a lot of great information in preparing and understanding what civil defense is all about. And then you can go to our website at civildefenseradio.com and find out more about what civil defense is, a modern definition of civil defense, and some of the information about the threats that we mentioned here, and then some. But Mike, it's been great having you on the show. Again, it's a great pleasure. You're a good friend, and man, you amaze me with all your blog posts that you do, especially the work that you've been doing recently on the power industry, and this one here, I think is probably your number one article that you've done, because it just so impactful. This New York Times should be picking this up and giving you credit for writing something that exposed something that they should have probably found.
Well, Preston, it was great being here, a great honor to be on your show, and I'm a big fan of Civil Defense Radio.
Great. Well, Mike, again, thank you. And to our listeners, this has been Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. I really appreciate you guys listening to our show today. And as always, please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you until next time.